Last month, the world's geography just changed forever. Canada and Denmark are two totally different nations located thousands of miles apart from one another on different continents separated by the entire Atlantic Ocean. But in one significant way, the two nations share one major geographic similarity. Until just last month, in June of 2022, they were two of only 17 countries across the world that shared a land border with just a single other country. The others being Brunei's single border with Malaysia, the Dominican Republic and Haiti each bordering the other on the island of Hispaniola, the Gambia that's surrounded by Senegal, the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom each bordering the other on the island of Ireland, Monaco surrounded by France, Vatican City and San Marino each surrounded by Italy, Lesotho surrounded by South Africa, Papua New Guinea stuck with Indonesia on one island, and Timor-Leste stuck with them on another island, Portugal stuck on the Iberian Peninsula with Spain, Qatar stranded on a peninsula blocked by Saudi Arabia, and South Korea stuck on another peninsula blocked in by North Korea. Until last month, Denmark's only land border was with Germany to their immediate south, while Canada's only land borders were with the United States across the south and the west with Alaska. But despite being located thousands of miles away on two different continents, Canada and Denmark are a lot closer than you probably initially thought. Because, as of the 11th of June 2022, they each officially border each other by land. And that means that they've each removed themselves from the already small list of countries that only border a single other country. But how can a country in Europe and another in North America even border each other by land? Well, it's because their border is a very tiny one, and it's located right here in the literal middle of nowhere on a small, barren, uninhabited rock of an island known as Hans Island. Today, Denmark and Canada both split the island roughly 60-40 respectively across a border that's only a tad longer than 1,200 meters. This is what makes them both technically bordering nations now. But for decades before just last month, the issue of who between them actually owned this insignificant and pointless island was an unresolved territorial dispute that generated one of modern history's friendliest, good-natured, and wackiest conflicts known as the Whiskey War. It was a very rare territorial dispute for both nations, and particularly for Canada, who also shares the longest international border in the world with the United States further to the south and the west, stretching for nearly 9,000 kilometers in length. From a more European perspective, that is a length of border equivalent to the distance between Portugal and Bangladesh. But despite this massive length, the border between the United States and Canada has been generally calm and peaceful for most of the past two centuries, with few disagreements. The only notable disagreement that they have over land today is the maritime border between the two nations off the coast of the U.S. state of Maine and the Canadian province of New Brunswick. Here, the Canadians insist that the maritime border between themselves and the Americans is here, while the Americans, conversely, insist that the maritime border is actually here. It doesn't really matter all that much, save for a couple small islands that are stuck in between the two competing claims here. Machias Seal Island, home to a single controversial Canadian-built lighthouse and visited often by American tourist boats, and the even smaller and insignificant North Rock. Legally speaking, both the United States and Canada maintain overlapping claims of sovereignty to both of these uninhabited and meaningless islands, which means that they sort of just exist in this weird legal gray zone, the final specks of the North American continent north of the Rio Grande that haven't yet been settled. But somehow, even less significant and yet more controversial than these little islands is Hans Island, which for nearly half a century existed as a diplomatic thorn in the side of Canadian-Danish relations, with each claiming the entirety of the island for themselves. The conflict dates back to Canada's control over Ellesmere Island and Denmark's control over Greenland, and the narrow Nares Strait that flows in between them. For most of history, the exact maritime border between the Canadians and the Danes here was legally undefined and generally assumed to be the strait itself. Because, well, it's a frozen wasteland where nobody actually lives permanently. The closest actual permanently inhabited settlements are Alert in Canada, 198 kilometers away, and Sir Arapaluk in Greenland, 349 kilometers away. And they are collectively home to less than 150 people. This area was simply never really geopolitically important until in the 1970s, when people started figuring out that there could be valuable things like oil and natural gas in the area. And so, in 1972, a team of both Canadians and Danes began working on the first legally defined maritime boundary between each of their big Arctic islands. They established 127 points of latitude and longitude across the Nares Strait, roughly in the center between Ellesmere and Greenland, and then drew a line between all of these points to formally mark out the border. But there was a small anomaly. Around here, the strait is only about 35 kilometers wide, and this speck of rock called Hans Island is pretty much dead in the center of it. Which is why both the Canadian and Danish surveying teams each claimed it for their own respective countries. Unable to come to any kind of agreement, the 1970s-era maritime treaty between them simply left the border in the Nares Strait between points 122 and 123 blank, with Hans Island itself an undefined territory in the middle. They basically just decided to kick the issue of ownership over the island down the road for someone else to figure out at a later time. It's just that nobody at the time probably expected that a later time would mean about half a century and the collective efforts of 26 different foreign ministers. For decades in between then and 2022, Canadian and Danish soldiers took alternating turns visiting the island and raising their own respective flags, taking down the other's flag, and placing a bottle of their favorite national liquor. In 1984, a group of Canadian soldiers visited by helicopter raised up their flag and left a bottle of Canadian Club whiskey for the Danes who they knew would come by later. And sure enough, the Danes did, by respectfully taking down and folding up the Canadian flag, raising the Danish flag, and replacing the Canadian Club whiskey with a bottle of their own Danish schnapps, along with a sign which simply read, "Welcome to the Danish Island." This humorous process kept going back and forth for decades until it got a bit more contentious and a little less friendly in 2005. In that year, the Canadian Defense Minister at the time, Bill Graham, decided to set foot on the island personally, to raise up the Canadian flag and assert his nation's sovereignty to it. Just 5 days after his visit, the Danish government filed an official protest to the Canadian government, while the Danish Deputy Premier of Greenland publicly stated that Hans Island had been occupied by Canada. Tensions were at an all-time high, and the Danes decided to send over this fearsome warship to the island to reassert Danish control. But then, the prime ministers of both countries began to call for peace and calm, and both the Canadian and Danish foreign ministers agreed to meet thousands of miles away from Hans Island in New York City to discuss the terms of diplomacy. During that meeting, they essentially agreed to solve the matter diplomatically, but they each continued insisting that Hans Island was rightfully theirs in entirety. So, in practice, it didn't really go anywhere, although the Danish foreign minister did agree that he would cancel his ship's mission to the island, and that he wouldn't take down the Canadian flag and re-hoist the Danish flag. At least for a while. Beginning in 2012, there were renewed calls within both countries to solve the issue by simply splitting the island in half. And then, 6 years later from there, in 2018, they each announced a new joint task force to settle the border dispute once and for all, which was finally officially agreed upon another 4 years later, on the 10th of June, 2022, with roughly 60% of the island going to Denmark by extension of Greenland's own control, and the other 40% going to Canada's Nunavut territory. And pretty much the only reason why it took so long to actually solve was that it was actually pretty convenient politically for both nations to continue keeping it unsolved. Canada and Denmark have been allies with one another for a very long time, and have enjoyed friendly relations for decades, going back to them each being founding members of the NATO alliance in 1949. If you pay closer attention to the actual dates when the Canadians and Danes made their highly publicized visits to the island, raising their flags and leaving behind their national liquor, they generally always took place soon before election season in each country. It was an easy method for both governments to just kick up some patriotic feelings and sentiments right before an election that literally had no risk or downside at all. both Copenhagen and Ottawa had obvious political incentives to keep dragging out the irrelevant conflict for decades. Especially once it was discovered that the island didn't have any resources, and any potential oil or gas nearby would probably be too expensive to drill and economically unviable. Hans Island was always politically valuable to keep contested. But then in 2022, it suddenly became politically valuable instead to actually solve it. In February, the Russians shocked much of the world when they decided to settle their border disputes with Ukraine by launching an enormous and bloody invasion with hundreds of thousands of troops, culminating in the biggest war seen on the European continent since the end of World War II. That has already caused tens of thousands of violent deaths and millions of refugees. Accompanied by a newfound global sense of uncertainty and fear for the future not seen since the end of the First Cold War. What better way for the governments of Canada and Denmark, two NATO allies, to place a spotlight on Russia's own military aggression in Europe by solving their own long-standing territorial dispute over Hans Island peacefully? The matter is all the more pressing to the Arctic members of NATO, like Canada and Denmark, along with the United States, Iceland, and Norway, because in recent years, the Russians have been rapidly remilitarizing their region of the Arctic with airfields, radar stations, highly increased troop deployments, and even the presence of nuclear missiles and torpedoes. As the Arctic continues to warm throughout this century, it will become one of the greatest arenas of conflict in the new 21st century Cold War between NATO on the one side, and the Russians and Chinese over on the other. And looking forward into this inevitable future, keeping an unresolved territorial dispute open between two NATO allies within the Arctic, no matter how friendly and cordial, would have been an unwise decision geopolitically. And so, the time had finally come for Denmark and Canada to solve it once and for all, and formally become neighbors by land, as well as by sea. After all, a lot of what's happening today are the consequences of what happened yesterday, last year, and even last century and beyond. Keeping up with current events is essential to your ability to understand the way our world works. And I get to do that every single day by reading all of the new short articles posted to Morning Brew every morning. And that's what I love the most about using Morning Brew. Their free daily newsletter gets you up to speed on all the current events and news that you need to know in business, finance, and tech in only 5 minutes and in a way that's far more relevant, informative, and frankly witty than traditional news is. For example, over the past week, I got to read articles about why the US stock market just experienced its worst first half in more than 50 years, how a hacker allegedly stole the data of a billion Chinese citizens, and why New York and New Jersey are finally starting the first phase of a $14.2 billion megaproject to build a new train tunnel beneath the Hudson River. And since you watch Real Life Lore, I know that you like getting a bit smarter and staying better informed on world events. And regular, repeatable patterns of learning are exactly the best way to do that. So, go ahead and start your mornings off with Morning Brew by subscribing completely for free when you click the button that's here on your screen right now, or by following the link that's down below in the description. It's one of the best ways that you can help support this channel completely for free, and you get to stay up to date with current events and be a better informed person. It's seriously a win-win, and as always, thank you so much for watching.